station number 23213, Rule 8.
Major Potts, Rule 8.
You're on the ridge to the east of your...
Yeah. And we started off, and it then appeared that we had about 50 people in the platoon, but there were all sorts of people, mostly Northumberlands. The odd Americans had come from somewhere, but one has to realise that it was a rout and not a withdrawal at this stage. And we looked, you could see into the valley as we moved off that... the whole place was burning, full of smoke, odd tank burning. And the valley was covered with sort of movement of people, mostly making for the Belgian position. We eventually did get to the Belgian position. And...
the people in the valley you could see moving, were they intermingled with the Chinese?
Well, I think basically they were Ulster rifles and that ilk Northumberlands withdrawing. The Chinese were certainly there because there was a lot of firing going on. I mean, we, during the earlier part of the retreat, used to stop and fire from the standing position at the Chinese if we thought they were a danger to us. I don't think we hit too many. Anyway, we went on, and the tanks were firing. And in fact, it was... we wanted to get out of it, that was it, get ourselves organised. And we moved off down the road from the Belgian position and eventually hit the MSR, main supply route, which was covered in vehicles, moving south. Managed to stop the odd vehicle and put soldiers on. And Hall and myself got onto the last, we were the last to leave, to go down the road. And
were you getting any support from the artillery during this before?
I suppose we were. I don't think I really, it was just one colossal noise. There was a lot of shells being fired by the 8th Hussars. I presume that the mortars and the mortar battery was firing, and also John Mole was firing with his mortars,
the 3-inch
mortars. But that was earlier on when we first started to withdraw. Anyway, we went down the road, smoking our cigarettes, which we'd scrounged, and about 5 miles down the road, a nasty Royal Military Police sergeant stopped us and had us off the vehicles and said, "The F echelon for the Royal Ulster Rifles is up there."
What way was this man nasty?
Well, I mean, we would have quite happily gone on to Poussin if we could have done.
You wanted to carry on with your ride.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Anyway, we went up, and there were the colour sergeants. All were there. Jeeps and trailers. And there was hot food and... a few comforts like cigarettes and stuff like that. And we hung around and more people came in. And eventually, at the end of the night, or the day, we had a muster parade in the company. I can't actually tell you how many of the company were missing at this precise moment, but quite a lot.
What about your own?
Well, my own platoon, casualties for, was killed 3, missing, presumed dead 2, wounded 4, and POW 2. So that was 11 out of whatever, 28. And I might as well at this point point out that the total people at the muster that evening before the O group was 14 officers and 240 men, non-commissioned officers and men. The CO then sent for me and said, you are the company commander now.
This was a rather sudden promotion.
A rather sudden promotion. I hadn't been commissioned a year yet.
Was it a welcome promotion?
I didn't get any pay for it, if that's anything to do with it. I had one platoon commander who had cracked, or partially cracked. I never saw him again. He went to the rear. Well, no, he didn't. I sent him back. That's right. And Houston, Shaw Stewart, and myself. And so I said, we've got to hold this position until dawn tomorrow morning. Well, I had a lot of people who hadn't even got rifles at this stage. They've thrown them away. They hadn't got any more ammunition. They weren't... I wasn't very pleased, but there it was. And so I organized into two platoons. At the same time, I sent the Sergeant Major back with the officer. Basically, the officer and the Sergeant Major with the color sergeant and a couple of chaps who had no rifles to organize us wherever we were going next. We were obviously going into reserve. And that was it. Then I put the company out into their positions. I don't know how many there were, 60, 70. And we didn't have any tools for digging. We might have had a couple of shovels. We were on this hill, small hill.
Was this by the side of the road?
100 yards, 200 yards from the side of the road.
Could you actually control the road?
Well, no, because it went away up the hill, sort of. It was, if you like, a holding defense position. I think we'd all run away if the Chinese had come. Anyway, we were told that by dawn, an American Ranger unit would take over from us. And we were one side of the road, and the Northumberlands were the other side. And we understood that the Gloucesters there wouldn't be any Gloucesters. In fact, there were about 25 or 30. It was the F&A echelon, Gloucesters. Well, we stayed there, and at about midnight, the Americans appeared, and we quickly handed over to them, giving them, I think, a minimum handover. And then we started the trudge down the road. And I walked down the road for what seemed like a very, very long time with the CO, Gerald Record. And eventually, the RCT, no, they weren't RCT, they were RASC trucks, arrived. They turned round, and we put the troops on them. And we said, where are we going? And they said, you're going to Yongdongpo, which is south of the Han, which is an old ammunition depot. Japanese, I believe. And off we went. Well, about 3 or 4 hours later, but perhaps less. We arrived at Yongdongpo, where the color sergeant gave us a hot cup of tea with rum in it. And we unloaded our rifles and gave them a couple of blankets each. And we lay down on the floor and went to sleep.
How long did you sleep for?
Well, the next, I suppose about 6 or 7 hours maximum. And then we got up the next morning. And during the morning, more of the fusiliers, or not fusiliers, riflemen appeared. And John Lane, Company 2IC, turned up. The one platoon commander had been sent to hospital. And the company was reorganized. And 48 hours later, we were sent out onto the Incheon Peninsula. And were given defensive positions south of the Han River, which we had to prepare. The Han at this stage was maybe a mile wide. So it was a pretty wide river. There wasn't much chance of the Chinese coming, but we were actually back in the line. And during the next 2 days, a lot of reinforcements arrived, and we were re-kitted and everything else. And I think we actually all sent telegrams to our homes to say that we were either okay or whatever it was. And that was the end of a most exciting period of my life. So there we are. Go on.
These replacements, where did they come from?
Japan, yeah.
Were they all from the regiment?
They were all Ulster riflemen, and there was another draft on the way by sea. So we were under strength for a period of time.
Did they settle in all right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. So there was no problem over that. One wrote letters to parents or relations of people who were missing or dead. We did have a problem there. Quite a lot of people in the battalion were not wearing identity discs when they went into action. And I have a list here which doesn't actually... as the RUR casualty list for the whole year of 1950, October 50 to October 51. And our total killed in action was 3 officers and 46 other ranks. Died of wounds, 3 officers and 8 other ranks. Battle accidents, 2 other ranks. No known grave, 11 other ranks. POWs, 6 officers and 151 other ranks. Wounded, died of prisoners of war, 30 other ranks. Wounded, 7 officers, ORs, no record. Missing, presumed dead, 36 other ranks. And that was our total number of casualties for a whole year, not just that battle.
But most of them were in that battle, weren't they?
I would say 2/3.
When you were doing the withdrawal,
yeah.
You mentioned in your narrative you went through the Belgian position.
Yeah.
What kind of position was that? Were they properly dug in, or were they simply in place?
I think they made shell scrapes, and if I remember rightly. I wasn't too interested. I wanted to get them between me and the Chinese.
Yes. It didn't look as though they were going to be able to hold on that.
Well, I think we all realised that there had to be a clean break.
Yes.
And the tanks, the 8th Hussars, were absolutely brilliant. Although they lost a number of tanks to human Bangalore torpedoes, if you like, one or two, their own casualties were not very high. As I said before, Henry Hoof, who was our squadron commander, won a DSO there.
Had you actually met him before the battle began? Yes,
we'd met our tanks before. I always felt at the battle that Gerald Record, who was commanding, who already had a DSO, should have had a bar to his DSO. I think he was most probably the finest commanding officer I ever encountered, although he was only a major. He was, in fact, given a Silver Star, American Silver Star, for it, and I think he might have been given a mention in dispatches. But I believe we would have had heavier casualties if we hadn't had him as CO.
Was it then this Belgian position that gave you the clean break from the...
Well, it gave us a clean break, and it gave the Belgians, because their casualties during the... I think the Chinese, once they got down the valley and they were opening up onto the sort of Mön supply route, then checked themselves. And I think also, well, I know so, they were going to push on and try and capture Seoul. There had been a hastily prepared line around Seoul called Line Golden. And we went up to look at it one time after a couple of weeks when the Chinese had been halted and pulled back again. And it really was no line at all. There was just two or three strands of wire and a few slit trenches. Obviously, the Chinese had overexpanded themselves and withdrew back.
You think they'd overextended their logistics then, so they couldn't?
I don't think they had any logistical support at all. Most probably, it was one truck which brought up sacks of rice and dried fish or something. Or lived off the land. I never saw any ration packs or anything like that belonging to Chinese.
You mentioned that when you went through the Belgian positions, you stopped to rest for a while and then moved on.
Yeah.
You said the Chinese were closing fast and the Belgian heavy machine guns opened up.
Yeah.
How close did the Chinese get before the Belgians started?
Oh, 200-300 yards. Yeah, I would imagine.
That's quite a close range, isn't it, Paul?
Well, it is, but they wanted to be certain, of course, that they weren't our people running into them.
Yes.
Our own B Company, which I told you had been holding a position further up the valley, had withdrawn. I never actually saw it, because they were astride the road, and they did have quite a number of casualties.
Yes. They were blocking.
They were a blocking position, but they were overrun.
Yeah.
Anyway, we...
You're also saying that on that night when you were in defence, that there were one or two small incidents, because the men were in a highly nervous state. And with the help of the NCOs, you were able to overcome the emotional difficulties.
Well, you had one or two people who... I suppose you would say they were traumatised. You give them a good kick, they were all right.
Yeah. What it was you could do to settle them down.
I had one chap who started screaming, and I just got hold of him.
Yeah.
Gave him two or three fairly good slaps on the face and told him to pull himself together and be British. Sounds a very pompous thing to do. But what else could I do?
Did it
work? Yes. But then, in those days, life was a lot simpler than it is 50 years on, where you live in a mamby-pamby society. It's hard to realise, for I expect I would have found Waterloo or the Crimea well beyond my comprehension.
you mentioned the American Rangers came in and relieved you. What impression did you get of them?
It was dark. They were young. Mm. They were in clean kit. They all had rifles. I don't think we really worried as long as they stopped the Chinese chasing us.
And did they seem to know what they were doing?
They'd been given their orders, and they knew we were a demoralized force. At that stage, didn't remain that way for long, but we were pretty demoralised.
Once you got out of the possessions and back down to your area on the Incheon, how long did it take you to restore morale and to get back into a battle fit condition?
I think we were. Well, we went back into the line again. About 3 to 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
I think in a couple of weeks we would have been all right. In my own opinion, that is. I don't know what others thought.
What was done in that couple of weeks to
We did a bit of training. We did a bit of cleaning up, relaxation, administration. And we all went to Incheon, I think, if I remember, did a little bit of training with the American Marine Corps Amtraks, which are amphibious
track vehicles,
in case there was a rumor that we might have to cross the Han and go north, and the Americans would take us.
So they would be shipping you across the river?
Shipping us across and giving us a fire support from the Amtraks.
Were these Amtraks similar to the Buffalo that we used?
They were more up to date. They were more, if I may say, you've seen the pictures of the Argentinians arriving in Port Stanley. They were more like that than the Buffalo. I wasn't really au fait with the Buffaloes that we had in the last war.
Do you think that one of the causes of demoralization might have been simple physical exhaustion?
Oh, undoubtedly physical exhaustion. I think also a contributory factor being that we had done so well in the initial 72 hours, and then we had got ourselves into a position where we were being chased by the Chinese. We had chased them, and they were chasing us. I believe later that the remark was made by our brigadier when asked by the American general what the situation was. He gave a fairly saying it was more or less under control. There was a bit of pressure, the art of the understatement. And the Americans just didn't understand it. Well, there they should have done, knowing that the Gloucesters, 2 days previously, had been more or less surrounded. And they sent a Filipino combat group up to try to get them. They couldn't get there. And, of course, St. George's Day on the 24th of April was the Royal Northumberland's main day of the year. And they were all expecting sort of roast turkey and beer, which they didn't get. They got Chinese takeaway. Yeah. I have tried from time to time to talk to various people who were prisoners of war. Without a great lot of success. People don't seem to want to recount, to recall what they did and their long march north and their treatment. That I can understand. I also understand that our people withstood interrogation and the word I'm looking for, I can't really describe what I'm looking for, but we wouldn't call it degeneration, but it was the humiliation is really the word, of being captured, especially by the Chinese, who we thought were nowhere near as good as we were. I also am told, and I don't know, I think this is true, our people were much better off under the Chinese than they were under the Koreans. The Korean has a very cruel streak, whether he be north or south of the 38th parallel or whatever it is.
Did you see evidence of that
cruel streak? No, I didn't, but there were. South Koreans did murder potential who they thought were North Korean spies, and they were just women and children. I had no knowledge of it firsthand, so I cannot state what happened. But as I say, I'm sorry, I really never got the Chinese, or got people to tell me how bad the Chinese were. I did receive about a year ago a document from Lhasa into, I think it's in Tibet, and it was a documentary paper by the Chinese on how well they looked after the British, and that the British prisoners were far better than the Americans. They washed and cleaned themselves properly and were more amenable to discipline. You may have seen it, I don't know. And that is about the end of the Battle of the Yimjin. 1 month later, after the battle, we arrived back at Sol Marie. The Chinese had withdrawn across the river, and we reoccupied the positions held by the Glasses.
What were those positions like?
I didn't think personally they were very good.
What was wrong with them?
Well, they had, for a month in the line prior to this, and they hadn't moved, and they weren't particularly well dug in. There was also a lot of talk at the time that they fought to the last round. There were still ammunition boxes full of ammunition. And my own opinion was that their forward company had all the hay boxes and cooking equipment for that company was still there on the ground. I don't think it should have been there at all. Not if they were in a defensive position where the enemy could cross any night of the year.
Were they on a forward slope?
They were on the left of the road down to the crossing. They were on a forward slope. They were on high ground to the right, Castle Hill. But this company that had its cooking equipment was the one we occupied. We took over from a Greek battalion. It really was quite awful. They'd been there for about 3 days. And their field hygiene and their general position was foul. We redug everything to suit us and filled in their slip trenches because there was human excreta everywhere, wasn't buried, or even in their slip trenches. I was very disappointed in the Greeks. I'd always thought prior to that they were maybe quite a good disciplined army, but I had my doubts.
When did you dig your new position?
Basically around where they had. It was all in the same area. And this was to be our main position for a long time. 4 months.
Were there any further major developments on that front during your occupation of those positions?
Well, we actually improved our positions as we went along, putting up more wire, mines, a lot of wire, funneling enemy in onto our fields of fire, drums of napalm, electrically detonated, if it was required.
Yes, they call those, don't they?
Do they? Well, whatever. And we generally were there for, as I say, about 4 months. We did patrols across the river up to what? 2 or 3 miles.